so many special things and just would otherwise seem ordinary and mundane, you realize it's really not.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. We have a couple of very special guests with us in studio today to talk about their unique family and the path the Lord has been leading them on to bring them to this place in their lives. Tony and Leslie Biller live in Raleigh, North Carolina with their 10 children. Tony is an attorney practicing intellectual property litigation, and he also serves as the vice president of the board of directors for the Answers in Genesis Ministry. Leslie is a chemical engineer who homeschools 9 of their 10 children. They attend Colonial Baptist Church in Raleigh, and in their spare time, Tony and Leslie can typically be found shuttling, coaching, and chasing their children on soccer fields all across North Carolina. Tony and Leslie, it's a great pleasure to have you in the studio today. Welcome to Family Policy Matters. We're looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure. Well, Tony and Leslie, you are a true inspiration, and I'm so excited to give our listeners a chance to get to know you and to hear about your journey of faith and family. Today, you have a beautiful family consisting of yourselves and 10 children. Right off the bat, I'm going to set aside the cheaper by the dozen references and quips, but I do want to give you an opportunity to give us a snapshot of the path that brought you where you are today.
I grew up the youngest of 3 kids, grew up in New Jersey. My parents were both from England, so we moved around a lot. Never stayed in the same house for more than about 3 years. When I was 12 years old, got the opportunity to move to England, where I stayed until I was 16. And during that time was the first time that I heard the gospel. And I say now that at that point I received the head knowledge of the answers. It wasn't until much, much later after we were married that I received saving faith, and that was through listening to Billy Graham. Growing up, the focus for me was on career and on going into the field that would be the most lucrative. Becoming a housewife was never on my agenda. Ended up going to Rutgers University for chemical engineering. My mom died the first year that I was there, and shortly thereafter, my dad moved to North Carolina. I followed him to North Carolina and worked for the Division of Air Quality, and we got married. Once we started trying to have children, I had 2 miscarriages. And the second miscarriage was a very traumatic event in my life, and I was a Christian at that point, but it really deepened my faith. And I vowed at that point that I would, if I ever was blessed with children, that I would become the best mom that I could. I feel like at that point I really changed my focus from following my career to following the Lord.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Tony, what about you?
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Didn't grow up in a religious family. We were occasionally Catholic. Left for college at Purdue. Army paid my way through college, and I ended up in North Carolina down at Fort Bragg serving with the 82nd Airborne Division. Eventually caught Leslie, convinced her to marry me, fell in love, and left the Army and ended up in law school. And didn't really take Christianity too terribly seriously. God really worked in my life throughout the military, and I had the fortune of serving as an Airborne Ranger. And when you're in really extreme conditions, it really sobers yourself up about who you really are as a person and who God is and how you're not in control. And I started to grapple with those issues courtesy of the U.S. Infantry. And then, kind of a turning point one night, I was sitting in a parking lot with Leslie, and she talked about her mother dying, and being the typical sensitive, at the time, 220-pound airborne ranger. But Leslie said something about, what do you think about death? I said, well, I think, you die and that's it. And you rot and go away. Huh. And then she started to cry. And I realized, oh gosh, nice. We were just talking about her mother. That was really sensitive.
Yeah.
And then I apologized. I said, I was really insensitive of me, and I'm sorry. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, well, obviously I insulted your mother and your memories of your mother. She says, I'm not crying for my mother. I'm crying for you. Huh. that I didn't believe in God. And I found that really sobering because I'd already realized that Leslie was, you know, several IQ points higher than me, you know, very accomplished in everything she set her mind to. And it really sobered me to take these things more seriously. And like her, I ended up in a place where I was intellectually a Christian, and it wasn't until years later that Christ really opened my eyes and saved me, you know, really from myself. And that was the last semester, the last month of law school in April of 1997.
Well, thank you for sharing that. So let's talk about your family a little bit. Of course, you have four biological children. Talk about them a little bit, what their ages are. And then we certainly want to talk about the six adopted children that you have as well.
Well, four biological children. They are now ages 16, 15, 12, and 10. The adopted kids are age 15, 12, 11, 9, 8, and 7.
That's
this
right.
One.
That's
I think
good.
That should, hopefully those all add up to 10. So we have a full house. There's seven boys, three girls. At the time this all started happening, our oldest child, biological child, was 13, and the youngest was 8.
Well, I'd love to hear the story about how you got to know these children, initially the children that you adopted, and what that relationship was like initially and how it progressed.
It started late fall of 2013. Our oldest daughter, Renee, who was then 13, approached us and said, "Dad, there's families in our church that host children for Christmas." And yeah, I kind of looked at her and was trying to process what she was saying. I was like, "Oh, that's really interesting. And I have no idea what hosting is. What are you talking about?" And she explained there's ministries that bring orphans in from overseas. And I kind of thought where she might be going with this. And I was like, "Oh, that's really great. I'm really glad that they do that." And she said, "You know, you and Mom have talked about maybe someday adopting." And we had. Mm-hmm. "Wouldn't it be cool to host?" And I said, "Well, you know, that's really an interesting idea. You know, let me think about it," which Dad's mind was, you know, let me shelf that over there.
Right.
And hopefully you'll
right.
forget about it. And so she came back. She's a very persistent young lady. She came back 3 days later, and she had her three siblings in tow. She said, "Dad, I've talked to the other kids, and we've decided all we want for Christmas is to host some orphans."
Wow.
So I think the first thoughts in my mind, I wish I could say they were praise God, they were check and mate.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
So what was the hosting experience? Obviously, you agreed to their proposal.
We probably tend towards the type A control side. And so we set these rules, you know, okay, we're not going to break birth order, meaning we're not going to get kids that make the oldest not the oldest, or the youngest not the youngest, or, you know, preferably it'll be a bookend, a younger bookend, younger than our youngest child. It'll be a safe child. You know, we're not going to get any older boys because, you know, what type of boys come out of institutions and orphans, in particular the older boys. And so we'll get like a young, safe girl. And so we did. We found a girl that fit, actually two girls that fit the description, and they looked really safe. And then we were talking to our ministry coordinator, and we're like, you know, this person looks really safe. She's like a six-year-old girl. But we had a real active lifestyle. We were involved in a lot of sports and outdoor activities, and said, you know, this child's going to come over. They're going to be exposed to our family. That might be new to them. They're going to be exposed to a new country, new food, new language, new times. It's going to be hard. I can only imagine it's going to be that much more difficult if they've got a weak constitution and we're always on the go. And we like to do kind of physical, robust things. And the woman, Michelle Ziner, said, without missing a beat, she said, "I have just the family for you." And we're on the telephone and she gave us the number and we typed it in. And it was five boys, five older boys, and a little baby girl. Broke, I mean, every single rule
right.
that we set up. But then God just really started working on our hearts. Just listen, these kids know they're never going to be adopted. No one expects you to adopt. They just, in fact, we've got a donor that would pay half of the expenses associated with getting them over here. It'd be just for hosting. And it just sounded so hopeless for them, only because they were a big family unit. And as we looked at them, she was right. I mean, they were very involved with sports. looked like very active kids. And God just really, and the funny thing is Renee had been sending us links to kids over the past few weeks, and she had repeatedly sent us links to these particular kids. And there's hundreds of kids on these pages.
Right.
But when Leslie and I would look at it, it didn't even warrant a response. You know, she'd email these to us and we'd just delete, you know, six kids. There's no way. But then we started thinking, well, maybe there's something here.
So what was that experience like when you did host these children?
You know, people say when you become a parent, you get to view life through your children. But now viewing life through an orphan's or child, you know, a child that has never felt a family's love, it brings it to a whole new experience. Seeing them experiencing things for the first time, like a bathtub. There was one time we thought it would be really fun to make a bubble bath. We had a big whirlpool tub, and so we filled it up, and they just stared at it like we were crazy. They had no idea what it was. So we put some toys in it, some old duckies or whatever, and they thought that was great fun to stand on the side and play with the duckies in the water, but they still didn't understand that they could get in the water.
Yeah.
So then we brought a laptop over and Googled, you know, children in the bathtub.
There's a big language barrier. We couldn't tell them.
You
couldn't visualize it.
So we showed them this picture, and then, you know, just see the light bulb went on, and they ran and got their bathing suits on, all three of the little ones, and jumped in the, and it was great fun after that. They wanted to keep getting in the bathtub. One thing in particular that really struck us as how they had never experienced a family's love was tucking them into bed at night. It's something we always did for biological children. So the first night we went around to kiss everybody goodnight, and a couple of the new boys looked at us like, you know, the big boys looked at us like we were kind of nuts. By the end, we found out afterwards that was one of their fondest memories, was being tucked in at night. We found out later that sometimes in the orphanage they would be spanked for getting out of bed.
Right.
So I think finally feeling loved and secure and safe instead of afraid at night.
And these kids aren't little snowflakes, broken little, they don't come across as broken little people. I mean, they grew up in an orphanage, and they also didn't come across like street toughs, but, you know, they were resilient kids. And I remember I would have completely forgotten it, but the first night I tucked in the oldest boy is, you know, a stout young man. Even then he was a pretty strong, very athletic boy, and like Leslie said, I tucked him in and he was just kind of befuddled what was happening and just gave me the strangest look, and gave him a kiss on his head and told him goodnight. And then I realized as the hosting went on, he was the first kid in bed every night. And he really didn't think much of it. And he always had a big old grin on his face after that and didn't think much of it. In fact, probably would have forgotten about it until, as Leslie said, we found out later, when we went to Latvia, we had to go through some court hearings. And the judge there shared with us that this oldest boy had no interest in being adopted. And his opinion changed that first night when I tucked him in. So he'd never been tucked in before. And he decided, I think I could like that. One of those things as a parent, you just completely don't even think about. You know, you just take for granted, of course, I'm going to tuck my kids in and send them off to bed with a nice word. And for him, that was something, you know, brand new. It was a paradigm shift. So there's so many special things, and just what would otherwise seem ordinary and mundane, you realize it's really not.
And with that, we're just about out of time for this week, but please be sure to join us next week as we continue our conversation with Tony and Leslie Biller and hear the remainder of their amazing adoption story.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.